Yes, you're wrong. The podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, back with a pop culture roundup. Oh, rarity. But, you know, every now and again, when the universe aligns, we sneak one of these in for you.
Yeah, and it's a good one. It's the end of the year. It's the last pop culture roundup of 2025. Mm-hmm. Thank the Lord. Yeah, we did it. We got through it. I'm happy for us.
And I feel like really after sort of a ho-hum year for television in a lot of regards, things sort of came like blazing back with all of these different TV shows and like docuseries and stuff.
Oh,
and
yes.
I don't exactly know how to discuss them all. Like if we want to, like, are we saving them for the end or should we just like discuss all of these now? Because we have Stranger Things, there's Heated Rivalry, there's I Love LA, there's the Taylor Swift docuseries thing.
Wait, so you just have opinions you want to share. What, Heated Rivalry, is that the hockey one? I didn't watch it.
Yes, I haven't watched it either.
Oh, okay. Well, but there's news.
Well, I mean, news is that there's a lot of sex scenes in it. It's apparently based on like a book.
Okay.
I'm like, you're clearly not on Twitter and not on gay Twitter. It's like a very horny hockey show about these like two gay hockey players, and they're like constantly having sex.
I thought one was a baker. Is that wrong? Did the internet just leave me?
One of them's a baker. I think they're both hockey players.
One was
players.
Like a fan, like a watcher, like wasn't a professional.
I don't think so.
No, am I wrong?
I think they're both hockey players.
Okay.
I mean, again, I haven't watched
Google
this.
It. I'm gonna Google it.
Just Heated Rivalry. Because one of them is like Russian, and the cover of the book, they're both playing hockey.
I guess I saw a meme that was like, oh, of course the non-hockey player is more buff than the hockey player.
Well, okay, but then, okay, so actually, no, I think you sort of are right about this. But
Thank you. So
the main two characters are hockey players, right? And their romance is the main part of the show. But then I was reading that one of the episodes was sort of like a bobble episode about another hockey player on the team. And I guess it looks like he is hooking up with a smoothie shop barista.
Oh, yeah, smoothie shop. Yeah.
So, like, the main characters are both hockey players, but then there is a separate gay romance that's a hockey player and a smoothie shop person.
So you just wanted to talk about the vibes, or is there like a controversy, or are people mad about it, or is there news?
Well, yes. So yes, one, the vibes, which is like the immediately when the show. So the show is a Canadian. It's on this Canadian network Crave, and then HBO. Like recognizing that, wait, this is basically like softcore porn. The gays will love this. Got the streaming rights for it in America, but like at the same time that it premiered in Canada. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
Which
I feel like
is not usually how international show rollouts work in the US.
It's like how Schitt's Creek started doing
right. That. Yes. Okay. Yes. So it's like they recognized that this was going to be a big deal. Early on, this wasn't like something people were having to like torrent, and then eventually HBO got it. But immediately, like all of these scenes from the show that are like so horny were all over Twitter. And so then everybody's been watching this, and I'm like, I actually don't need to go watch this like softcore porn hockey show. I'm like,
you're good.
I'm standing up to gay people, and I'm saying no, we actually don't need this. I don't want to watch whatever this weird, badly acted romance is. Okay, whatever. I haven't seen it, so I really can't say. So there's that. But then, separately of this, the controversy to discuss is obviously the only thing that anybody's talking about in the gay community is Heated Rivalry. So somebody or another was interviewing Jordan Firstman, who is gay, who was kind of he was like an annoying internet gay, and now he's on the show I Love LA. And they asked him about Heated Rivalry, and he's like, well, I don't think that like the way that they're having sex on the show is actually like realistic to how gay people have sex. Like, that's not the sex that I am having. And sort of like didn't really expound upon that, but then that unleashed an entire wave of controversy on like people who didn't like him, people who didn't like the show, people who said the show like wasn't realistic, or people who were like, oh no, you're just jealous that you don't have what these people have, and so your sex like of course isn't this good, like just a whole litany. Then he sort of had to come out and make an apology, which is like, hey, I'm an annoying gay person who like talks too much, like sorry, sometimes I say things that are controversial. But so yeah, there's just been a lot of drama, I guess, sort of around this show for weird reasons, given that it's sort of just like pulp. And right. Then also there's, I mean, as is the case, there, I feel like 20% of the audience is like horny gay people, and then the other 80% of the audience is like tween girls. So there's also then like fighting in the comments between like these, you know, 17-year-old girls who have read the entire book series are now arguing with like 30-year-old gay men who have only watched two episodes of the show. It's a very odd place to be on the internet.
Right.
And I'm just lurking there, having not watched or read the book, and have
not swayed either way, just absorbing
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. No, I had heard bits and pieces about that. So thank you for giving me the full context.
Yes.
So Taylor Swift docuseries.
Okay, yes. I have not watched.
Okay, yeah. We got the first two episodes. And so then there's four more coming. So there's two dropping every week through the end of the year. And she also released her full like concert video, which you can now watch on, which is called Taylor Swift's The Eras Tour, The Final Show, I think, which is different than what's also on Disney, which is the Eras.
Right. Because this has her new, the new songs from.
Yeah. And you know what's
interesting?
What was that
album called?
The Tortured Poets Department.
Tortured Poets. But it does not have Showgirl in it because she hasn't toured that yet.
Yeah. Okay. But she did like change a lot of the show around like the structure of it, you know, the order of it. So it is like a different show technically. Yeah. But what's interesting is I watched the Tortured Poets Department part, and they're two different directors. And I do not like the second recording as much. There's a lot of like editing going on, like a lot of cuts, you know. There's not as much focus on just letting a song be. It's like, oh, she turns her head, we're turning the camera. Oh, we're turning it's just like a lot. It's a lot of editing and I don't like it. So I wish she'd kept the same director from the first one, which I think is a better concert film. But that's
I have a question about this follow-up question. Okay. So in the new version, is the whole thing reshot? Okay.
So that's what I mean.
These are two completely different films.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So this was literally filmed over the last leg of the last concerts in Vancouver, like her last show over two nights or whatever.
And is there any behind the scenes stuff or it's just the concert?
In that part, it's just the concert. It's just the concert film. It mirrors the original concert film. So it's just like the full set. And since there are changes in like how she, like the order of the eras, it's all a little different. And I think it also features, because Sabrina Carpenter did the show with her. So she might be I didn't watch the whole thing, but I imagine that during the acoustic set when Sabrina came out to do part of a song, she might be in it too. So it's like a full show. But anyways, gotcha. I didn't like the direction.
I just wanted
to say that.
Noted.
But then the docuseries itself, which starts during her second half of the tour. So when she's finishing up Europe and then she takes like a 2-month break to add Tortured Poets. Or no, that's not right. Because Tortured Poets is in this one. So that's right. Okay. I'm getting my timelines confused because she had two breaks throughout the Eras tour. One, she added the Tortured Poets department. And then there was like a another like Christmas holiday before she came back to the US to do a few more shows and then up to Canada. And so this takes place after most of her Europe tour. And so the first episode like touches on canceling Vienna because of that terrorist plot.
Yes.
And then it also talks about there was that stabbing at the little Taylor Swift dance party right before the concert started too. So it's like
okay.
a very serious opening. And I think it does a good job. And I was talking about like to Rob, I was like, you know, Taylor Swift, like as an entity now, like really bothers me in some of how she, even like how she did her Spotify Wrapped video. Where, you know, when you do your Spotify rap, your top artist has like a little message. And like right. in previous years, it's been like, thanks for being a fan. Love you. Blah, blah, blah. But this was like, thanks for listening. Be sure to check out my videos on Disney Plus coming out soon. You know, like just the promotion of her yes. image is mm-hmm. a lot for me currently. And her lack of like fortitude in her own supposed morals to like stand up to Trump or to like
yes.
call out like. Whatever. She's letting a lot of other people do the talking and surmising and never really standing up for herself. And that bothers right. me. But I do think that there's duality of people, right? And she doesn't seem like the worst person on human earth. And so watching the docuseries is kind of interesting at this stage because she does come across as very likable and it doesn't feel forced. It just feels like, okay, this is a person who exists in a bubble and she's very nice in that bubble, but she doesn't look outside that bubble. And that's yes. frustrating. So it's like watching her interact with her team and talking about her dancers. And there's a whole viral clip about her giving these huge bonuses to everyone on the tour. And all of that is very nice. And it seems to come from a genuine place. And she's very polite to staff and like whatever, like all these little things that we can say, see, she's not an asshole celebrity. And so in that way, this is great. You know, this is great publicity for her, and that exists in a duality too, where it's like, it's probably sincere, but it also benefits her, blah, blah, blah. And so like kind of accepting that is sort of interesting because it's like, yeah, I think everyone runs into that because even like with someone like Beyonce, it's like, you can love what she does for the culture or like how she supports these people or these, you know, collaborators, but then she also goes and dines with the Kushners or hosts Jeff Bezos, you know? And so it's like, ugh, you just like, you want to believe the best in these people and like what they show you, which is usually the best of themselves. But then you're also faced with like the reality of like, well, they are also very happy to not be invested in reality. Yeah. So I think it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I mean, it's like fun stepping back and seeing the behind the scenes of a concert and like, and the detail that goes into something like a stadium show with like, even just getting the stage itself built or like running around and figuring out how these different things work. Like it's a fun behind the scenes. It's like, yeah, it's an interesting look at a huge tour. But I don't think it's going to like win over new people. And I don't think it's going to do anything really like, I don't think it's going to be about Taylor Swift as a person so much as like, I think they're very focused on the show itself as promised, as promoted.
I mean, so. I think it's interesting because Miss Americana, I think really did.
Yeah. That won people over.
Yes. That did so much heavy lifting of brand PR. I mean, like it was, reputation and that and Lover all sort of like combined to like in this, I think, very like well executed like several year plan to sort of like relaunch herself. But I think that yeah. that documentary did like a ton of heavy lifting on that front because it positioned her like from a feminist angle. Like it just, there was a lot there that we sort of hadn't seen before. I definitely like, I haven't watched any of this docuseries yet. But I, you know, from like the handing out of the bonus checks and stuff, it's like, you can tell that there are certain aspects of this that are like maybe hopefully leaning in that direction. But I don't think that she's capable, or I don't think that the sort of like universe is capable of giving her another rebrand unless she really like goes off in a different direction of some kind. Like she's been famous long enough and we've seen her through enough of these iterations that there's not a lot of like new things that you could really like pull from unless she really like, you know, is like, oh, I'm giving away $500 million and moving to a ranch somewhere, you know, like that kind of a thing, yeah. which I don't think she's going to do.
Yeah. And I think it's like, it's a good, like, I think she is very like aware of what she wants now. Like she's distancing herself from being a person and she's really focused on talking about her product. And like, and that's probably smart in some ways because she doesn't want to be the Miss Americana anymore. And so it is like all about like, even in these like documentary like interviews and whatever, she's talking about like the Eras tour. It's not concerned about quote unquote self-image, even though of course there's that angle, but it's like less about like come behind the scenes and like eat dinner with me and my friend, and it's more about look at all the pieces that went into making this Eras tour huge, and wow, that Eras tour was huge. And like, and so it's like interesting to see someone really face down like what a phenomenon that was without really expecting it to that degree, right? But then also being someone where that phenomenon changed them, you know, she's much more like guarded, or I don't know what it is, like she's just jaded or something. I don't know, like obviously I don't know her full psychology.
I think they're just like in the landscape of how we interact with celebrities now, that's changed a lot.
Yeah,
it used to be that you had these celebrities who were not online, that you did not know very much about. They were only movie stars. And then there was all of this information in tabloids. And then when they did interviews, people were very intrigued about their regular lives. And so there was lots of like questions that were geared towards that. And they didn't really know that they couldn't answer, that they could refuse to answer those questions. So it's like, on one hand, people in the 90s, early 2000s, 80s, like you knew more about them as people, but also sort of less about them as people. Where now, that everybody's online constantly and there's all of this social media, like you have a lot more information about everyone, but also there's now whole teams of people that are in position to kind of keep these actors' private lives private and to only focus on their, you know, like projects and whatnot. And I think between like Rihanna and Selena Gomez and Beyonce and Taylor Swift, like all now having these successful sort of like business lines, that there's even more of a like, okay, you can either talk about their art or you can talk about them as sort of like business people, but the human element is even more removed because you have these like two giant screens in front of anybody. Which I do think is kind of fascinating. And it does feel like that there is a sort of like spot in there for somebody else to kind of arise, because I think with these superstars who are so removed, it's like we need somebody who's a little bit more tangible and a little bit more human, because then you also have all of these influencers who are in some ways more human, because it's like they're just saying whatever they're doing, but also they're basically like branding machines where like their whole job is just to promote all of these random products that they get sent. So I don't know, I think there is like an authenticity gap that somebody can fill. I don't know who that's going to be. I mean, maybe it's like sort of Chapel Rowan is kind of like doing that in some regards, but yeah, I don't know, the Taylor Swift of it all is very fascinating.
Yeah,
and her sort of almost becoming like a corporate entity is not where I thought this was going 10 years ago, but sort of makes sense at the same time.
Yeah, it's like, I enjoy, like if I'm able to turn off my brain, I like this version of Taylor. Like I like the version of her who's like hardworking and really passionate about what she's putting together. And she's kind and she's thoughtful and she's giving away $200 million to everyone who helped her get there. And that's like, that's a very nice image to sit with and a person to sit and seeing the creative process there. So it's like, it's a fun docuseries, but it also does exist in like this wave where I'm like, well, she's also very like, I don't know. It's just interesting. Well, so I'm curious.
Thing I just don't get about her. I mean, this goes back to kind of what we're talking about with the money, like with Emma Stone's money or whatever, whenever that episode was.
Yeah.
But like, okay, Taylor Swift has $1 billion. Like, I understand that she is interested in these like records and, you know, like weird on paper goals of like, oh, the most sales of blah, 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 right. blah, 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 which feels so strange to me. Like, why? because it's like she's constantly breaking records, but they're like, they're all of these weird things that you're like, didn't she already do this? Or, oh, no, that was with the streams included, or this was, it's like, it doesn't, none of them really are like sticking in my mind or make any sense because they're constantly just like sort of almost made up in some regards, these things that she's breaking, or she's breaking versions of things that she herself already, like, it's just, it's sort of cockamamie. But what I kind of don't understand is like, she clearly does not need any more money than she has. Mm-hmm. She's never going to be hard up for cash. And it doesn't really seem like she has that expensive of tastes.
Yeah.
Other than flying her jet all around, which I mm-hmm. think she's doing less now that she's, you know, like not on tour and stuff. But I'm like, it doesn't seem like it would be that difficult for her to remove the sort of two biggest sticking points that people have about her by one, like not doing as much weird merch stuff, which doesn't feel like it'd be that hard to do. And two, making some political statements about things that she already, that like seemingly already she already cares about and doesn't really, and wouldn't, I don't know, it doesn't feel like it would impact sales or whatever.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't even necessarily need to be super controversial.
Right.
Statements like she could come out and say something about trans rights or LGBT rights in a sort of like vague general way that already stands with what she has done in the past.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like either of those things would take very much work. Like it's almost like she's going out of her way to get this criticism.
I do think that if I were to psychoanalyze her, my assumption would be in her mind that she's just like, she just is, it's that sort of you can't win it all, so why bother type of thing.
Right. No,
and I this agree. Like, I don't want to put any more risk on me, you know, which I think is selfish, especially as someone who is in no danger whatsoever. Like, yeah, she's had some traumatic experiences of being like, you know, having a terrorist plot at one of her shows, and I'm sure psychologically that's rough. But it is like, well, that's not, you don't have to hide yourself more in the bunker that you already exist in. Like, you're fine. And yet, if you want to like claim your for like love and peace, there, you just have to step up in different ways. And she's not willing to do that for whatever reason. I think in her mind, it's like, there's like a stubbornness or something in the way she talks about it, or like, even thinking of like, oh, coming after Olivia Rodrigo about that song. There's like a protectiveness of her rights, or like, you know, her things, and she has to stand up for herself because no one would otherwise. Mm-hmm. And that's my analysis. I think it doesn't come from a place of like, well, secretly I am a Nazi sympathizer and secretly I am like a conservative bigot and I hate everything around, you know, liberalism and social equality. Like, I don't get that vibe from her. It's not like she's a Gwen Stefani sellout, but it's more like, oh, well, it didn't work. I didn't do, you know, like, my political statements haven't made a difference. So, like, why bother now type thing?
I think it's more of like a, well, no matter what I do, people are going to be mad at me. So I'm just not going to do anything.
Yeah, it's like canceled energy.
Yes, which is like just, it's just a mindset that is very, like, you can only have that mindset if you're really well off and sort of nothing impacts you.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not a mindset that's thinking about like, okay, well, yeah, sure, you might like get some flack or whatever, but there's all of these trans people in the world who are really going through very, very difficult times and all of this legislation. And you have armies and armies and armies of fans. And there's lots of, you know, 15-year-olds or college students who haven't really thought about this very much. But if the person who they are most obsessed with in life was like, hey, I love trans people, like, here's me with trans friends, blah, 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 that they would rethink those positions because they're young people and that could really like shape them in some formative ways and, you know, save lives in the process. But alas.
Alas. So yeah,
it'll She's be got merch to sell. It. She doesn't have time.
She could sell a, what is it? Save the Dolls. Is that the?
Yes. Picture? Protect the Dolls.
Protect the Dolls.
Yeah. I'm like Taylor Swift. There's actually like sell some trans merch. You know what I mean? Like Disney World selling those rainbow pins everywhere. Like just make us some trans Taylor Swift shirts. Like it was not that difficult.
I know. Yeah. So
Transler
be...
Swift. Done.
There you go.
I know.
Yeah. So there, the duality of a pop star continues. But what was the other news? Oh, speaking of pop stars, what do you think of that Charlie XCX mockumentary? Is that what we're calling it? Drama?
Yes. The moment. It's coming out at the end of January. I'm intrigued. Yes. Yeah. It's a mockumentary. I guess it's supposed to be like, this is my take on this was she's friends with this guy who's a filmmaker. They're traveling around. They're kind of bored. And they're like, oh, let's just sort of like make a fake documentary about like the life of a pop star. But if she was sort of like a menace to everybody. And so, cause she said she sort of plays like the hell version of herself in this. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm like intrigued by it. Do I necessarily think that it will be amazing? No. But I do think that it feels like it's going to be a little bit more tongue-in-cheek than, and like aware of what it's doing than like that Weekend movie that came out earlier this year that was like so up its own ass. Hurry Up Tomorrow?
Is that I don't know.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. This sort of feels goofy to me. So I'm excited to watch it. She wrote a third. She's on Substack right now. And I read her first two Substack articles. I saw that she posted a third, which I haven't read yet. But about like the end of being cool or something like that. Mm. I haven't looked at. But the second one I thought was very interesting because it's sort of about like being famous and how... Like, in some ways, being famous is great, but one thing that I thought was interesting is she talks about how when you're famous, you just end up spending a lot of time in these, like, liminal spaces where you're, like, in the back hall of something, you're in a green room, you're in a cab, you're in a whatever. It's like, you would think that you're going a lot of cool places, but instead you're, like, in the back rooms of stuff and you're in a lot of, like, weird hallways and things, which I was like, oh, okay, like, I can see that. I think especially where she's at in her career, where there is a lot of like traveling around to do all of this stuff while she sort of like cements her legacy slot is interesting. I don't know. I love Charlie XCX. I'm very interested to see this. She's also done a lot of acting in the past couple of years. And when I say a lot of acting, it's like, I think she wants to be an actor. And so she has taken a lot of small roles in sort of random movies. So she had three things that were at Toronto. I've seen two of them. She's in three things that are going to be at Sundance, including this, The Moment, her like music documentary thing. But she's just like an actor in two others. So I am interested to see sort of what she's got going on here. I also do think that, and this maybe is going to sound up my own ass, but like, I think Charlie XCX does view herself as like an artist and thinks of things from that perspective. And so I think she is a lot more adventurous than a lot of other pop stars are in the different types of things that she wants to do, which will lead to some flops, but I also think will lead to some cool successes and leads to interesting work, you know? Mm-hmm, like, I think I think Beyonce is also obviously an artist, but she's like very honed in and sort of like, and I think she had her periods of like sort of experimenting and some of the things didn't go well. And so now she's like, okay, I'm only doing things that are like exactly perfect. Mm-hmm. And then I think you have people like Rihanna or Taylor Swift who are like, okay, the new things that I'm going to venture out to are just like business stuff. It's not like different kinds of artwork. Like, what has Taylor Swift done that's sort of like weird and original from an art perspective in a long time? I can't think of anything, but she's like expanded a lot of these like business sort of friends. So I think it's fun to have a pop star who's like gonna try and do some weird shit. Like, I'm excited. I think some of it's going to be bad, but I like that she's going out and doing things, and I like that she's trying random stuff and is like, sure, what if I went to Storm King and did a whatever? Like, great, perfect. You know, right. Like, I don't know. I'm intrigued. So
yeah,
I will go and watch this when it comes out.
Cute. Yeah. Okay, perfect.
Yeah. I don't know.
Did you have any other stories?
Well, do we want to talk about Stranger Things, or are we saving that?
Oh, yeah. I'll do it for my love it or hate it. How about?
Okay. Okay. Oh, well, then I'm trying to think. Well, the only other story that I think is sort of fascinating, are you following the Bronwyn Newport saga on Real Housewives of Salt Lake City?
No.
Have you followed this at all? So there's there's this woman on Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. Her name is Bronwyn.
Okay.
And her backstory is that she grew up in Utah. She was a Mormon. She got pregnant, and sort of like her family, the guy's family who she got pregnant by, like all sort of like excommunicated her. She left. She had to raise a daughter but on her own. She went to, she sort of like went and got like a business degree and was sort of like a business executive type person. And then at some point she ended up meeting this much older businessman, and the two of them, you know, to hear them tell it, like fell in love because they were very interested in each other and whatever. And it had nothing to do with money. And so she's been married to him, and her daughter is now 18. But so she joined the show last season, so season 5. And her big thing is like she's very fashionable. She's like always pushing the limit with all of this like fashion stuff. And she, you know, buys things from all these different designers. And because her husband is so wealthy, like she, you know, she's always dressing in kind of crazy ways and whatever. And she's easily the richest of all of the housewives in this group.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But her husband obviously hates being on the show and hates her being on the show, does not like her, like she, like clearly due to like contractual obligations that he did not really realize what was going on, like he's forced to film these scenes where she has to sort of, where she complains to him about things that the women are doing, and he's like, why are you hanging out with them? They all seem terrible, like this is miserable.
Okay.
And so he hates it. He's also kind of bossy to her. The other women are sort of like, well, clearly you're a gold digger. And she's like, no, I'm not a gold digger. And she was like, no, I'm not a gold digger. We don't even have a prenup. And it's like, okay. Like, I don't know how that helps your side of the story. But then these allegations started coming out about him cheating and him on a plane, like sexting people while farting was this big saga. And so then everyone's like, you're dating this, like you're married to this old man. He's cheating on you. He's farting all the time. Like what is going on? He clearly hates that you're on the show. You love being on the show. Like what's like, how is this going to end? Well, it just came out that she is breaking up or that they're getting a divorce. Which is not crazy because most Real Housewives get a divorce at some point or another, but is wild just because, yeah, she does not have this prenup. So it's like, how much of his money is she getting? I don't know. And like, is she going to be able to afford all of this fancy clothes? But then at the same time, fans have started making fan edits of her in a lesbian relationship with this other woman who's on the show, Whitney. And so now everybody's kind of like has gone back and is like looking at things that they're saying and are like, wait, are the two of them in a secret lesbian relationship? And that's what caused her to get a divorce from her farting, cheating husband. So there's lots going on in Salt Lake City. This season is just about like this season's already filmed everything. So the divorce and stuff will be on next season. But I'm very intrigued. This all, and Jen Shah just got out of prison. So really, Real Housewives of Salt Lake City is, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Why does the farting come into it? They just are like, they just think he's stinky like that, or what?
No, apparently, like, so all of this, all of the stuff about the cheating came out because he was on an airplane and the person who was sitting behind him could see his phone and was like taking pictures of him, like sexting people or like, you know, looking at nudes or whatever. I don't know. And the person who said this was like, yeah, he kept farting while he was on the plane. Like, because they were sitting behind him and they were like, yeah, he kept farting and he was also sexting. So that's like then this saga.
That is my nightmare, like, to be caught out and then also.
I know. It's like what's more embarrassing, to be cheating on your wife or to be farting? This is the second airplane related plot of the season, because also one of the housewives were coming back from a cast trip. And supposedly one of the housewives like spent the entire trip terrorizing this other one, like kicking her seat, shouting at her or whatever. But there's no video footage. And the woman who was supposedly kicking and everything claims that she watched two movies and then fell asleep. But everybody else in the cast was like, no, you were screaming. And so now they're like, can you just not remember this because you were on so many drugs? And
they
they were asking her what movies she watched, because she kept saying that she watched two movies. And she said, Crazy Rich Asians, and then another movie, the name of which I can't remember. And everyone was like, okay. And then they were like, well, what was the end of Crazy Rich Asians? And she had no recollection of that either. So it was like,
so dumb.
Yes. But again, there's no real evidence of anything because it was on this plane and they weren't filming.
Yeah. Wow. 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 That's great. That's some good TV.
I'm like, that was pretty Real cool. Housewives of Salt Lake City is really incredible television. Like, if anybody is, I know people are doing rewatches of it now because I'll see things on Twitter and whatnot. But like, if anyone is looking to get into The Real Housewives or just like needs a show to binge, like, this show is immaculate, and every season just gets better and better and better. There's one bad season. Season 3 is not good because they rushed it because of Jen Shah's trial, but the other seasons are all incredible.
Oh, wow. That's great to hear. I'm happy for you. And the representation of Salt Lake.
Yes. Yes. And ex-Mormons.
Yeah. Very powerful stuff.
Mm.
Gorgeous.
Mm-mm-mm. Okay. Love it or hate it.
Okay. Okay. So let's talk Stranger Things, because the first four episodes came out Thanksgiving, and then we're due another four on Christmas Day, and then the final episode on New Year's, which you'll be witnessing.
Which I'll be seeing from in a theater.
New Year's Eve or New Year's Day?
I'm seeing New Year's Day, yes. Okay. Well, so it comes out, yeah, so the Netflix, and this is a weird thing that we should also talk about. Netflix is releasing the finale of Stranger Things in theaters. And it's only for New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. But the New Year's Eve screenings are all like in the evening. You know, like it's not like, I don't, at least where I was looking, there was not morning screenings. So you had to, and I was like, okay, well, I don't want to, I'm not going to go watch this at 9 p.m. on New Year's Eve. Like, why I'm going to be hanging out with somebody. So then I was like, okay, I will, let me go see it on New Year's Day, I guess. So I got a ticket through AMC to go see it on New Year's Day. However, because of Netflix's weird, you know, whatever, this is a quote unquote free fan screening.
Oh, okay.
And what I have to do is buy a $20 concessions voucher from AMC.
Even
that
as
I can
an
use on that day. Yes.
Oh, that's rough.
Yes, as an A-lister. So I was kind of like, okay, well, I would probably want popcorn anyways. So like, this really isn't like, it's there, like, I spent the $20 and I get popcorn and the movie ticket is free. So it's sort of basically like if I was an A-list thing, because I might have gotten popcorn anyways. But it is odd. And I'm like, huh. And it's only in theaters those 2 days. Then it's come January 2nd, gone. Now it's only on Netflix. And I thought nobody really cared. Like, I thought, oh, people aren't really paying that much attention to Netflix. I had heard Stranger Things. I had heard nothing about this. And then I went to go book a ticket thinking, oh, like, it'll be easy to get. Like, every screening is sold out. Like, all of these screenings in New York are completely sold out. Wow. I found, like, one seat that clearly, like, someone had canceled and whatever. So I got that. But I'm like, this is insane to me that there's this many people who are going to be back in town on New Year's Eve and are, like, desperate to go see the Stranger Things finale. But I will be there, you know, crying or whatever, watching the 2 hour, the over 2 hour long Stranger Things.
You think
finale.
You'll be brought to tears, like, of joy or lameness? Like, what?
I don't, well, I mean, we've talked about Stranger Things on the show before. Like you were the one who got me into Stranger Things way back when.
Yeah.
Stranger Things is about the same age as our friendship at this point.
Oh, yeah. So you, but you're saying, you'll just be like, oh, it's the end. Or are you, or do you like the first four episodes? Like, I guess I loved
the first three seasons so much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I feel like the fourth season kind of was like a weird blip of pop culture where it was, everybody was talking about it for like 3 days. And then I've heard no recollection of it since. I couldn't really remember what happened in it. Oh. When I was watching these four episodes and they're like, remember Eddie? I was like, huh. Oh yeah, the guy with the mullet. Like yeah. I vaguely, but it wasn't like I had any recollection to him. The only thing I really remembered from season four was the Kate Bush song. Yeah. And then, but then I've seen the Broadway show twice sort of on accident.
Okay.
So I'm caught up to that on that. So I don't know. I think that there's a way. These first four episodes did not really stir up anything in me.
Yeah.
But I think depending on how it ends and just the fact that, like, it's been 10 years and, you know, I don't know. I'm like, and I like friendship sagas. I think there's a way that I could cry in the finale. Okay.
Yeah, that's great.
Especially if I'm in a movie theater and it's busy. There's lots of people and, you know, the music and the whatever. Yeah. I feel like it's possible.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Because I
don't think you're
going to
cry during the finale?
I did not enjoy these first four episodes at all. I'm sorry to say. I feel like it's just like season four, I agree. It was just kind of arduous to get through. There wasn't like a lot that struck my memory. Like they were all separated, scattered to the winds, all doing different things that, you know, that always happens where they're divided up a little bit, but they end up dealing with the same thing. Whereas this was almost like four different plots happening and eventually they sort of intersected by accident. So I didn't love it. And then obviously all of the drama around getting to a season five, it was just like, yeah, these kids are too old. It's not really like fun anymore. And I think these four episodes were kind of speaking to those frustrations because so much of it is just like set up. Like it's all exposition. They're all just talking. And so there's not like your usual, I don't know, like charm or fun or zaniness. And the humor isn't really hitting in the same way. Like everyone feels kind of like caricatures at this point. Like Robin is so... Oh,
lesbian.
Dick. Let's choose Dick. Yeah, this is a dick joke that goes on for 30 minutes. And it's just, I don't know. I just was like, okay. And now we're also like looping in all these. I think the problem is that they got too big. Like now they're like, oh, we're going to use season five to answer every question about the Upside Down. And it's like, I just don't think that's ever what captured my attention. Like the monsters were the fun part. It wasn't like, oh my God, why is this happening to Will? Like it was like, whatever. It was like that just happened to happen for the story's sake. And so now they're like building up all this lore around. What's his name?
Henry Creel.
Vecna. Yeah, Henry. Vecna. And then you have like the Wills. I don't know. It's just like there's a lot going on and it doesn't seem to have the same charm as before. Like everyone's just kind of like tired.
Well, I think part of it is that they basically, the first three seasons are basically the same season.
Yeah.
Repeat it three times. Where it's like, there's something amiss. You kind of don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And so the first like four episodes of the season are mostly just them sort of like hanging out in Hawkins.
Yeah.
and like their friendships and whatever and relationship drama, while there's like vague negative things going on in the background. And then in the back half of the season, you kind of get to the like, oh, here's the, like, now we actually have to fight whatever this thing is. And it's just like sort of halfway progressively bigger versions of some kind of monster. And I think once they did it three times and it's like, okay, well, we had the regular version, then we had the summer version, then we had the mall version. It's like, you can't, like, we can't keep doing, like, you have to get to whatever the actual, like, mystery is.
Yeah.
And I think season four kind of tried to get, like, tried to do sort of a half and half thing where it was, like, a little bit more, like, they kept some of the character stuff, but then they also did a lot more of, like, the lore and the, you know, like, fighting and backgrounds and, oh, we're in the underground or the upside down and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But I think with season five, because they have to wrap up all of this stuff and also because we already know all of the characters, they just didn't do very much of the actual character stuff. And it's all basically been, you know, action kind of sequences or related to this, the upside down and the military and Vecna and blah, blah, blah. And I just don't really think that we're going to get to any of that personal stuff in these last four episodes, because we're already so thick into this action plot and it kind of doesn't feel like we're going to move away from that at all.
And they were like straight up killing so many people.
I
was trying to remember season four. Like, obviously they're escaping Russia, and so there's a lot of human murder probably. But it's like here, like, Eleven like full on breaks some dude's neck, right? Like, I'm like, wow. Like, I get the soldiers are, you know, the bad guys, but it's also like, I do not remember this level of human violence from the children before.
Yeah, well, and then the age thing honestly doesn't really matter that much to me. Yeah. I've really tried to
just accept,
divorce myself from that. Like, I feel like it's the moment, like the more that you get distracted, it's like with overcompensating, like you said, it's like you just have to kind of like whatever the world is what the world is. Yeah. Like, and also they're not really in school at this point, so
well,
it's like,
should be.
I mean, no, like they yes for like the plot, they, like, they did be, because they should be like what, in eighth grade or ninth grade or whatever.
No, they're
is.
In like 10th or 11th, I think.
Okay, sure. But whatever age they're supposed to be in the show, I'm like, yeah, sure, like, fine. What, like, maybe they're in community. I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, if I get hung up on this, it will ruin the whole show. And for, like, what? Like, it's not like the rest of this show is, like, extremely accurate. Yeah. And it's like, oh, well, the one thing about this that isn't real is their ages. It's like, no, well, they're fighting off, you know, some dragon whatever, and there's a wall made of tubers, and
Hall
there's a dream
of
world
under
and
military control.
Yes,
some sort
but
of
there's one truck that can come in and out easily to transfer
goods. Just so
goods
happens to be friends
and,
with the
I'm like, and they're the rounding up watching. All of the like the kids in the elementary
school. Oh my
school.
God, I know.
Yes,
I'm like, what scenario would I ever just give Penny to a military to a military bus? No further questions.
Well, and also when you sort of like don't even really know what's been going on in the city, and they're like, oh, the whole city's under quarantine, and you're not like, wait, why? Like, what happened?
It was also honestly my favorite part is the whole first episode is like this elaborate communication scheme with them running a radio show and speaking in code, but then it's like they all end up in the same house anyways to like talk about things, so it's like, why did you need a secret code? Like, you all live together, you know? It's like, I don't know, I was confused by the setup of needing to like share details about like when they'd be able to break through the military, but then they meet up anyways to talk about how they'll break through the military.
My favorite thing is that they keep having to I think that they must have done this once or twice in the early seasons, and now they're like latched in on it. But they keep explaining things in the terms of like some pop, like geeky pop culture phenomenon in the 80s, where they're like, oh, well, this is actually like, you know, in the video game, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, sure, great. Yeah, like, this is actually, like, Frogger, and we need to, Vecna is the frog, and we're the cars, or whatever.
Yeah, Mike
like,
just happens to have all the D&D character pieces in
his
pocket.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's amazing. good stuff.
No. So, but I'm honestly like having a fine time with it. I feel like I'm not, like, I don't really care that much. So I watched the first four episodes and was like, okay, that was, you know, enjoyable enough. Like, I'm excited for the last four. Mm-hmm. I'm not, I was very invested in this series back, like, during seasons 1, 2, and 3. I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
But I don't hate it. The one thing that, maybe I texted you about this. I'm like, it is so funny to me. You'll have to watch out for this in the next four episodes. How few shots Millie Bobby Brown and David Harbour are in together. Like, every one of their scenes is like shot of one of them, shot of the other. And it just goes back and forth. And there's even shots where it's like one of them is in the background, but it's like, or like,
they
one
like
of them
squashed the beef. They said that those are all fake rumors.
No, one of them is walking away and they purposefully changed the focus so that the person in the back is just blurry enough that I'm like, I know that's a body double. Like, that is not Millie Bobby Brown. That is the stand-in. I'm like, she's not on set this day. It's so funny. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. It's like every scene, there's like one shot where they're both in the same frame. And honestly, even those could be doctored. Like,
honestly,
you know, like,
honestly, I think it's a hate crime against Millie Bobby Brown that they have her in that hideous outfit for the entire show.
No, that is ridiculous. It's like crazy. So ugly. And it's not like, it's not like an outfit where you think, oh, a lot of people were wearing this.
Yeah.
Like, this was ugly then.
I mean, Rocky was wearing it, I guess. Maybe she's just like.
But was also Will's haircut at one point where Robin goes, oh, well, I noticed your bowl cut. And he's like, yeah, I guess this isn't really in style anymore. It's like, then why are you wearing it? Like,
well, there's no hairdressers left in Hawkins. They're outside of the quarantine zone.
The producers clearly hate Millie Bobby Brown and Noah Schnapp. And they're like, we are putting you in the worst,
sorry,
ugliest
outfit I've
ever
seen.
Sorry,
for probably the entirety of the show at the pace we're going. Because the whole first four episodes are a single day.
Yeah, well, and it's like, I guess to prognosticate a bit about the next four episodes, the, like, Vecna sort of comes and attacks a bunch of people, then Will shows off his powers. Mm-hmm. We still got to get Max out of the dream world or whatever that she's in.
Man, if she'd only run a little faster, like, what was she doing studying that gateway? She just wouldn't go for it. Like, you've been here before, Max, just run.
Yeah, I don't, and it was also annoying to me that she was only in like the last episode really of this first four, which I was like, was this scripted on purpose this way? Yes. Or is this like she was busy doing something and was like, I actually have other things going
on. It just took so long for them to figure out how exactly to wrap her ponytails. Like, you know, like, they just had to make her look like it's the lostification of
was
Max.
The other daughter, was she like a part of any of the other seasons? Because I had no recollection
that they
had a younger sister.
The girl, like, there's always been a little sister in the background, but she's had no like major role. And so they recasted her. So, I mean, not that really matters, because again, it wasn't a real role before. And I think it was played by like twins, you know, because they were like a young child. Now she's like has this big old Alice in Wonderland role to play.
Yeah, which I'm sort of like, okay, I don't know that we needed another character introduced here.
I know.
I could have sort of done that. That plot line is obviously going to be tied into the Broadway show.
Yeah,
like there's already been some scenes that had some overlap there, so I think that's why we have it. But I'm like, I would have rather just had Sadie Sink come out of a coma and be with everybody else and not had this plot. My favorite plot line so far has been the
dipshit.
Yes, the younger sister and her fat classmate and them having to like
Erica and what is it, dipshit Dan or something? David?
Yeah. Him like leading the meditation in the children's commune was so funny, and then slapping these kids on the head with this ruler.
Yeah.
That was great. I'm sad that we lost all of those characters and that they're all in the upside down someplace being strapped up to a
lung did they get dipshit Dan, or is he still
I think
no, because he's with Mike, right? Or did the Demogorgons take them too?
I thought the Demogorgons got everybody.
Yeah, maybe
they didn't get him. I don't know. Because they got the people in the van.
Yeah, and the
and the people in the tunnel.
Yeah. But I can't remember if dipshit was in that. I don't know. But yeah, he was the charming part. Which is like a reminder again that it's fun to see kids in these zany situations instead of like strategizing against the military for.
Well, it also is a testament, which is something that we learned from the Harry Potter films as well. And I'm sure that should the Harry Potter TV show make it so far, we, you know, people who watch it will learn yet again. Like, just because an actor has a lot of charisma as a child does not mean that that actor will have a lot of charisma as a teen. And you really gotta like get all of that out as quickly as you can, because you never know when that valve is shutting off. And sure, some of them sort of come back around to being good actors, but I think there's this kind of a dead period for everyone, no matter how good they are, where they're just like trying to figure themselves out. And like, I think that in this show, like, Mike and Galen, or what's his name? Gaten Matarazzo. Like, the two of them are, like, good actors, I think. The other three kids are bad. And I guess Sadie Sink is also good. So it's like, three of them are good, three of them are bad. But it's, like, very obvious that bad ones are bad. And you're kind of like,
you think Mike is good?
I mean, I think
he's a career.
I think he's good in other things that I've seen.
Haven't seen him in anything.
Like, he was good in Legends of Ochi that came out this summer. I think he's a good actor. He didn't really have very much to do in this. Like, he's never really given like emotional scene.
Well, do you believe in what is it? Mike and Will, what's their?
No, I don't. I don't think that's happening. Although Will did. Turns out being gay is a superpower. Tell your friends.
Yeah.
And the moment he was like, "Wait, I'm actually gay," he like, just
oh
like,
God.
"Yes, he had all of these powers." So I do love that for him. No, I don't think that that's where that's going, because I think Mike and Eleven are obviously like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
There's zero chemistry between the two of them, but that's a romance. And there's nothing in these first four episodes that have made me like question that. I do have a theory though about the like Steve situation. Steve, what are the other
people's names? And Nancy and
Charlie?
Charlie. No.
Is Charlie the actor?
No, that's
name?
The actor. Charlie plays. Because it's Will Byers.
Will Byers. And Jonathan Byers. Jonathan. Yes. Okay. So, because I think that the prevailing theory is that Steve is going to die to sort of like save Nancy. But I actually think that from these first four episodes, we're sort of getting the vibe that maybe Nancy was supposed to be with Steve all along, and that the two of them have more chemistry, and that Jonathan is sort of the odd one out. So I think that what's going to happen is Jonathan is going to sacrifice himself for Steve and Nancy rather than the other way around.
I bet it'll be a brother thing, because that's how the show starts.
Yeah. Either way, I think that he's the one who's dying. Yeah. And I think the fans are fine with that.
Yeah.
I think Steve is making it through unscathed. I think Hopper might die. I think that Jonathan might die. I definitely think that the weird man who's like smuggling goods into the... I honestly thought he was dead already, so I'm kind of shocked that he's still on there. But I think he's going. But yeah, I don't think any of the kids are going to die. And I feel like the fact that they didn't want to kill Mike or like either of Mike's parents also speaks to the fact that they're not going to really kill that many people off in this show.
Yeah.
Because those would have been easy characters to kill if they had wanted to.
Yeah. And now they brought back Seven, so Seven can die instead of 11.
Yeah. But which, no. LOL that they brought her back. Like,
they're
that
like, oh, you guys hated that episode, didn't you? Well, suck on this.
Well, I wonder if they sort of backed themselves into a corner. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
where they created her because they were like, oh, yeah, this is how this end is going to work. Yeah. And then they were like, well, now, shoot, what are we going to do? We actually have to bring her back. But now it's sort of campy that they brought her back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Was that season two that they introduced her?
I think so. It definitely
so that was a long
three.
Time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. So yeah, that was like her whatever Boston episode or something. Chicago.
Yes.
New York. She runs away.
Yeah, I can't remember where she went.
Oh yeah, what a show. What
when they did show the flashback of that though, it was like, oh wow, Millie Bobby.
I know. It's like, damn, older. She's grown. So much filler suddenly in this.
Yes.
In this child's
same face.
How did she get this blue face? Yeah. Oh yeah. Anyways, so that's it. We'll have to touch base after the holidays and see how it all wraps up.
Yes. Yeah. See how my finale watching experience goes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that this will be good. I think the finale will be good. I'm only imagining though, like, had I gone to watch the Game of Thrones series finale.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot
theater,
of ways this can be not
would
good.
Have been
yeah.
Hated it.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways this could not end well. And I'm more pessimistic than you, honestly. I think it'll be like a season four, like kind of like, okay, well, we did it. We got through
it. But didn't season four end with the running up the hill? Or was that not the
No,
end?
That was like mid.
Okay.
Was
that
it?
Was a good moment.
Because she...
She died.
No. That's like episode three. Because she's like sucked. She's standing at the graveyard and gets pulled into the air. And then she runs for it. And then she spends the rest of the season listening to that song on her Walkman.
So. Interesting. Hmm.
But then she almost dies because some sort of... I don't remember. They're in a house and poor Lucas has to deal with a racist footballer who's like trying to kill him. Crazy.
Wait, but wasn't that the part where... Like, isn't it when they're in the house that's the music part?
No. I remember it's in the graveyard. She's like floating like Christine was, right? Christine,
yes.
Wake up. And she's about to be like choked to death. And then she hears the song and they're rushing to find her favorite song on the Walkman. And
oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It's well, anyways, I don't know. I have faith that it will be adequate.
I hope so.
I say after watching the series finale event just like that just this summer, which was nightmarish.
You're like, oh, you know what, Michelle Obama might be in the Stranger Things finale. It could happen.
But you know what, I mean, here's the thing, the bad parts about Stranger Things I think have almost always been the acting, you know.
Okay.
Like, I think that the writing of the first three seasons was very strong, and the kids were obviously very, like, interesting and good at their jobs. I think that the fourth season sort of, like, falters because the children aren't as, like, charismatic.
It's the script. It's the story. It's the plot.
And I do think it gets, like, bogged down in the... in the like lore of it all. But I think that the best parts about the show are like the human parts. And I think that the ending will be very like human ending. You know? Like I think the last 20 minutes will be like after Vecna is dead and they're all sort of, you know, and I think that part will be good.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out sooner or later. Well, sooner rather than later, actually, because
it's coming up.
16 days.
Yeah.
We'll be there. And we'll probably have a better understanding as well after we watch the three episodes of Christmas.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, okay. We will be back on Thursday to discuss Wake Up Dead Man, the new Knives Out movie. And then we'll be on a bit of a holiday break. But when we get back, there'll be lots to discuss because we'll have Stranger Things, we'll have Avatar,
Anaconda.
We'll have Anaconda, Marty Supreme. There'll be so much going on. But yes, we'll see you guys on Thursday. Bye.